It's the D-O-double-G, the road dog, Jesse James, and by my side, as always, is that B-A-double-D-A, double crooked letter, badass Billy Gunn. Together we are the New Age Outlaws, and you're listening to the VOC Nation, and if you ain't down with that, we've got two words for you. Suck it.
VOC Nation provides live daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with the hosts and guests by phone call, email, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include the legendary Ken Resnick, who you probably remember from the AWA and WWE, former WCW performer The Maestro, Wes Frisco, who you probably remember from Impact, Brady Hicks, who you remember from Pro Wrestling Illustrated, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, and former Philly radio personality Bruce Wirt. VOC Nation's two most popular shows are Wrestling with History, featuring Ken Resnick and Bruce Wirt, streaming live on Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern, and of course, In the Room, featuring Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks and WCW alum The Maestro. And by the way, both of these shows take callers live during the show. What are you waiting for? Go listen live right now at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all of our podcasts by searching for VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. Oh, and follow them on Twitter, too, at VOC Nation.
Hey, guys, welcome to another episode of Talking Sass, and thank you guys so much for joining me. You know, this week's guest is so amazing that it's not one, but two episodes. So this week and next week is both dedicated to my guest this week, and she has had such a stellar career that I cannot wait to sit down and talk to her. But before we get started, let's talk about Patreon. Do you even know what Patreon.com is? It is a subscriber-based media platform. And for me, what I put out weekly is my podcast early. You know who my guests are early. Plus, they do photo shoots and all sorts of other exclusive content only for my Patreon members. So make sure you go and subscribe today for patreon.com/sassysteffi. You can go to Instagram and Twitter and find me as well at sassysteffi on both of those platforms. And if you're watching on YouTube or listening on your favorite podcast platform, make sure you hit that subscribe button. And if you're on YouTube, hit that bell notification because you never want to miss an episode of Talking Sass. Because like I said, this week's guest is going to be on next week as well, and she is so stellar that you don't want to miss a second of anything that I have to talk to her about, because she is an OG TNA knockout. She is a seven-time world champion. She is one half of the Beautiful People, and she's currently in ROH as a part of the Allure. She is Angelina Love, and like I said, just iconic. So I want you guys, especially on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube, make sure you go and comment and tell me your favorite Angelina Love moments, because there's so many that we could possibly talk about. And like I said, this week and next week's an episode. So next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about her time in Ring of Honor. So here she is, Angelina Love. Hey guys, what's up? This is Talking Sass, and I am here with the one, the only, Angelina Love. How are you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing good. Are you keeping busy during this quarantine time?
I'm so busy. Like life didn't slow down at all because of like what's been going on. Mm-hmm. I actually think it's almost been a little bit more hectic, if that's possible.
Wow, that's crazy, because I know you keep a regular schedule anyway. I mean, you have, of course, you're a mom, you're with Ring of Honor now, and I mean, obviously you're keeping in shape because you're still in the ring as well, so I'm sure your schedule is just off the charts.
I mean, I'm trying to keep in shape. I actually have to go film. Like, the last show we did was February 29th, so I actually haven't physically worked or wrestled since February 29th. And the longest amount of time that I took off in my 20-year career was just when I was pregnant, you know? So I was like, okay, so we got to go film, like, the first week of January. I probably need to start doing a little weight training just in the living room, because like the gym here is not open, the gym across the street's not open, I work at a spa at a gym and that's not open, and it's just like I just bought random things, a little stepper machine and like just weights to do in the living room, because I'm like, that's pretty much all I have right now.
Well, I mean, a lot of people have invested in these home gyms during this time, because I mean, I know here in Quebec where I am, which is funny because you were originally Canadian, and I remember one time when I saw you, you're like, wait, you're moving to Canada? Usually it's the opposite way around. Everybody's moving out of Canada going into the U.S. But here in Canada, the Oh, no worries. We love
it. Right, yeah, usually the Americans don't move to Canada. The Canadians come down to America, yeah. But, so you're not in Ontario, you're in Quebec.
Yeah, that's right. I'm right outside of Montreal.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
How's your French?
Very poor. I do Duolingo in hopes that it will get better, but it doesn't really help very much, at least not so
well. So when you go to school in Canada, which you'll learn with your son, French is the second language. So you have, like, French class, whereas in the States it's, like, Spanish, I think.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, I used to love French class. I was so good at French, and I took it up until, I think, grade 9. And then I kind of dropped it when I went into grade 10. And, I mean, I forgot so much, like, yes, so much. And I always say to myself, like, I'm going to get a Rosetta Stone and, like, freshen up my French because I want to. And I just never do because I just realized it was, like, $400. And to me, that's crazy. But I do, like, I can say, like, words and I can understand some, you know, basic things. But, like, yeah, I forgot so much of it. And it, like, kind of hurts a little.
Yeah, that's the same with me. I took advanced placement Spanish up until my senior year of high school. And I mean, now I'm like, I can say words and basic understanding, but the Spanish.
Bit of a conversation.
Yeah, the Spanish and the French, like, if you get talking too fast, I can't even focus in on a word. It's very hard. So,
yeah.
This is what it is. And speaking of high school, when you went, you were quite athletic. I mean, you were in volleyball, I believe in softball as well. I mean, you've always been athletic.
It's just me and my sister and my mom and my dad and our immediate family. So, but my sister and I have always been in sports. Like I did like gym, we both did swimming. We both played softball for like over 10 years. You know, we would always, my sister played soccer. I did track and field. I played volleyball, grade 6, 7, and 8. But yeah, we've always been athletic and into sports. My dad would always play catch with us, play baseball with us, you know, in the backyard or whenever we went on little family trips and stuff. So we grew up watching hockey with my dad, watching baseball with my, you know, Blue Jays, Maple Leafs. So it's just been sports like our whole lives. So we've always loved it.
So when did wrestling come into the picture for you? When you were in high school, were you interested in like the amateur style, or when you got out of high school, did you find like what was on TV and that was it?
No. So the first time I ever watched wrestling, I was like 7 years old, and my parents, we had like one of those old school TVs where you got to go up and you got to turn the dial for the channel. And like, I always used to get up earlier than everybody on Saturday mornings, just so I could go in the kitchen and just sneak some sugar for breakfast. And then I would watch TV. So I came across it one morning, one time on a channel I flipped on when I was a kid, but I was like way too young to remember what channel it was on or what it was called or what day and time and all that. But I always liked it because, you know, we were very athletic. So this was another thing. And I always wanted to be a show kid, which was just so weird because I was always kind of like introverted and extremely like scared of talking in front of people.
opposite from now.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, wrestling broke me out of it. Oh yeah. I could, like, if somebody was like, go wrestle 10 minutes or go talk in front of 10,000 people, I'd be like, where's the microphone? Let's do it. Cause it's so easy now. But like, I used to be scared to death of like speech day, you know, like you got to have the cue cards and you got to talk about something for 3 minutes in front of the class. Like I tried to be sick every year on that day. So I would just always try to be sick that day. So I didn't have to do it, but like, obviously my mom kind of caught on to that. But like, once I got into high school, I was still a little shy. I kind of really broke out of my shell in college, but I also got into wrestling my first year of college. I went into college when I was 17. I graduated when I was 19. When I was in high school was when it got like really hardcore because, you know, I'd stay up a little bit later at night and like TSN in Canada was showing it at, you know, like 9 o'clock and then they'd replay it at like midnight or 1 a.m. So I learned how to like get VHS tapes and like preset the VCR to start recording, you know, TSN from midnight to 1 a.m. when I was asleep. And then, you know, I couldn't get home from school fast enough to like watch, you know, the show after school the next day. And I just got like pretty hardcore. And so really like when I was about, I want to say 14, because I used to, my homeroom in grade 9 was math. Mm-hmm. So I would bring a wrestling magazine and I would hold, you know, instead of having your book open like this on the desk, I would have it up like this on the desk and I would just open a wrestling magazine in the, but the math book like looked like it was covering so my teacher couldn't see it. But yeah, got pretty hardcore in high school.
Now, when you started training in like, there was like basically one school in Toronto that just like basically turned out all of these amazing stars. So how was that for you going into there?
So I actually didn't start there.
Oh, really?
So EY was my first boyfriend in the business ever. I was like 19. And he had a very small school in Cambridge. So I would go train there, but I really only trained there for like 3 weeks because it was like I was killing myself because I was just, I had no muscle tone. I was just like scrawny. And I was always like when I would take a bump, I'd land on my ass and hit my head, land on my ass and hit my head. So it was just like tailbone head. And I was, and my elbows were black and just everything I wasn't supposed to hit, I was hitting. And like, I couldn't even like when I would get home, walk up the three stairs to get from the garage into the house because I just couldn't even lift my legs because my tailbone was such a, and I was like, you know what? I couldn't get arm drags. Like I couldn't get the bridge part, you know, bridging for that. And I was like, you know what? I thought I was going to be a wrestler, but obviously this is just not meant for me. I'm a Virgo. I got to know how to do things right away. The learning process is like, like hate the learning process. So I just quit for like 6 months, but I was still doing indies and managing. And I was just like getting so bored with managing. I wanted to get involved more. And I was like, maybe I'll give it another try. And then, you know, like my best guy friend in wrestling is Sin Bodie, and his brother Steve and Rob Fuego. So they were still wrestling at the time. And then like Tracy Brooks and Gail, you know, and then like Chris Chambers and Ash. I think Chris Chambers runs an indie in Ontario still, like the Toronto area. But like all these guys, we all kind of started this school, and it kind of moved from one place to another. But it was like such an awesome group of people because we would all go like hang out at Steve's apartment. Like Steve and Sin lived in the same building, but like Sin was on the third floor and Steve was on the ground floor. So we would always go up there and hang out, and everybody was, you know, kind of in that area. I was like an hour away, but you know, it was like a really tight-knit group, and it kind of busted it. Like, Ontario busted out a lot of people, like, in my kind of time frame, like, a lot of people that are still actively in wrestling today.
Yeah, 20 years later, which, I mean, you can't – there's not a lot of, like, areas, like, not necessary territories, because, I mean, that's not, like, the thing then. But there's, like, certain areas that, you know, have a – in different time periods in wrestling, turn out a lot of great people. But, I mean – they're usually around 5-10 years. Okay. But I mean, you guys all together, like 20 plus years for some of you guys. I mean, you've been around 20 years. I mean, it's amazing the kind of careers that you guys have had.
Well, we all started so young too, you know, so we had time. And even though like most of us are all kind of coming up on our 40th birthdays, it's like none of us look like it. None of us feel like it. So, you know what I mean? Like that is just a number. And everybody's still doing really well, like in demand, working a lot, have a solid job, you know what I mean? And we, you know, we're having families and getting married and having kids and getting dogs and moving and buying houses and all the things. And it's like, I just think it's so cool because there was even an era before us with like Edge, Christian, Rhino, and like our trainer Fuego was in that kind of era. Cause he was always doing, dark matches. Like when WWE would come to Toronto or Hamilton, like we would always go. And that was the time when like they were still getting like 40,000 people at house shows. Like, especially when they would come to Toronto, like they were still rocking and rolling. And like our trainer would always have like the dark match. Cause you know, they use the local guys and he was always just like on the cusp, but I couldn't have asked for a better trainer in Fuego, and I know every single girl that trained with him would say this because he always helped us so much. He was always about, like, what can I do for the girls? How can I help the girls? Like, and he's such a good-natured person. Like, I don't think I ever saw him get mad ever. He's like my dad, you know what I mean? Like, I've never seen my dad be mad, like, once in my whole life. Like, and he's just always laughing and joking, and he gives you a lot of confidence, and he always wanted us to try new things, even if we weren't sure of it. And it was just like, he was the best. And we would like freak out when we would all go like watching WWE come to town and he'd be in the Sky Dome, you know, doing the dark match before Raw. Like we would just lose our minds. But yeah, like there was also Trish too. She was just before our era as well. A lot of people. And even like Johnny Swinger, you know, coming out right on the border there to the States, and then like Rhino, anybody from like Michigan or like Buffalo, New York was always coming into Canada to do stuff too, and us going to those places too.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, what I have actually a question, because I wondered this when I was doing research. when you and Velvet got together at Impact, or, well, TNA at the time, actually, did you guys know each other previously? Like, had you worked shows together, or had you met earlier than that?
Yeah, but not a lot. So when I was in WWE Developmental in Deep South, she had come down. Like, I think she did, like, a, oh, gosh, like a Sunday Night Heat or something, like a match against Victoria in WWE, because she had a bunch of tryouts. But she had come down to Deep South to do, like, a week tryout there. So we had kind of met there. And then right before we both signed with TNA, because I was with WWE for 2 years and then I got released, right when I got released was when TNA was thinking about starting the Knockouts division. Tracy was already there and Gail was already there and Jackie. But they were wanting the girls. And so Tal, I just call her Tal. She was very high on the list. And then, you know, Damore was working there. Terry Taylor was working there. I had just been released from WWE. They were looking for girls. They knew me. They knew my work. So right before we started, which was like September 2007, her and I did, we did an indie, I think it was in Winnipeg, actually. And yeah, we did like a, I think there was probably two indies that I did in between like when I got released, which was May 2007, and when we started in TNA, which was like September. Okay. But we're just so similar. Like as soon as we got there, we just like a magnet, we just kind of came together. So.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because you guys have, like, such a dynamic chemistry when you guys are together with the beautiful people and the things that you guys have done since then, now with Ring of Honor and The Allure. I mean, I wondered how you guys had met, because the beautiful people, I mean, it just kind of seemed like you guys came in together and that's already kind of established. I mean, you weren't called the beautiful people when you first got there, but, I mean, you guys just click, like, perfectly. So I wondered how that worked, like, if it was that you guys had had the chemistry previously and decided to work together, or if you guys just had that instant chemistry.
Well, you know, there were so many new girls there, right? And I mean, like, I knew Gail and I knew Tracy, obviously. But, you know, like, all of us were new. Like, we were just meeting Kong. We were just meeting Roxy. We were just, you know, and Shelly and then so, but we had known each other at least from a couple of shows before that. So, you know, we would grab, we would hang out in the locker room. We would grab lunch. We would sit and eat lunch together. And then, you know, we, same sense of humor. We're both sarcastic. You know, we just kind of, and then we started rooming together, too. I think they were actually paying for our hotels when we first started, because we were just getting paid so little when we first started. I think they had us rooming together too. So we, and then we, you know, once we like were getting our own rooms, we just kept rooming together as well. But I think they had us rooming together too. So we were spending a lot of time together, like once we all first started working there.
Yeah. And for the, you know, beautiful people, you guys had like a lot of like, alternate people come in over the times. I mean, you had Moose originally, you had Kip at one time, you had Madison Rayne, you had Lacey Von Erich. What is, like, for the beautiful people, is it just you and Velvet, or do you feel like those people also, like, even their own way gave to the beautiful people and what it became?
Well, we're the two originators. It was us, our idea with Vince Russo. I never wanted it to be a gimmick where there was kind of like a little bit of a revolving door of like third member people. But, you know, these were just ideas that came along. We were actually terrified to have Kip in our group because we're like, oh, my God, this is like Billy Gunn. Like, yeah. DX, like, hello, got two words for you. Like, DX, you know, we were watching that on TV. Like, that was the height of the Attitude Era. And, you know, he's in TNA and we didn't know how he was going to feel being this grown-ass man who's done a ton of stuff in the wrestling business coming into this little girl group where we're like Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie. You know what I mean? Like we were like, oh Jesus, he's going to hate us because he was brought in as like our stylist or our makeup artist or something like, we're like, oh my God, he's probably dying inside. But he was so cool. He was like the teeniest, tiniest bit quiet at first because he also didn't know if we were like raging bitches either, right? So,
right.
But once we kind of just did like a couple backstage segments with him and like hung out and chit-chatted, we were just like, he just clicked with us so well too because he's such a big goof. Like he's so funny and he's such a nice guy and it's just like, it's Kip. Like, how do you not love him? And he helped us a lot too because, you know, there was a lot of times where when we were doing the Beautiful People, we were so busy. Like, we were always doing backstage promos. So we would always be, you know, they'd be knocking on the door. We got to go film this and we got to go film that. And like, shoot, it's sometime we got to get to the ring and like figure our match out because we have a match tonight too.
Right.
And sometimes it was just so clustery when we would finally get into the ring and be able to sit and put a match together. You know, 20 minutes later, it'd be like, okay, doors. And, you know, there's somebody's doing a run-in and this is happening and blah, blah, blah. And we would just be like, oh, we don't know what we're doing. And we start the show in 30 minutes. And Kip would be like, girls, listen, blah, 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 blah. This thing, that thing, this happens here. And then you guys are done. I'll come get you. And we're gone. And we're like,
hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, he's declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Thank you. Like, he could literally, in 2 minutes, just tell us everything we're supposed to do. And we're like, thank you. What would we do if we didn't have you?
Well, I mean, that comes with being a tag team champion many times over.
Right, and already having like years and years and years and years and years of experience in WWE, TV, you know, before us. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that was
so fun. So fun.
Well, I mean, it looked like you guys were having fun. And, you know, like, I'm thinking from your perspective in that situation, like, yeah, you would kind of be like, okay, is he going to even be okay with doing what he's being brought in to do because of the superstar that, like you said, that he was, and well, still is, really. So that's amazing that, like, he, you know, came right into the role and really rolled with you guys. And even
we're still all super close today. Like, my son and I went down to Florida, like, a couple months ago, and we went and visited him and his wife. That was the first time they met my son. And they just hung out. And my son, I knew my son would be all over him like a human jungle gym, and he was. His Kip is massive. But, yeah, so it's still, like, it's really great to have, like, that love and respect outside of the ring too. You know, it's such a, everybody can be friends and wrestling, but to have like a real relationship, you know, outside where it's like family, like, you know, I love his wife Paula and they're so great to my son, and they just knew him from like seeing pictures on Facebook and, you know, him recording little voice messages when he would steal my phone and stuff like that. So that kind of stuff really means something in like the real world when you have that outside of like wrestling relationship too.
Oh, definitely. Because, I mean, a lot of people will tell you, and especially if they get deep into the wrestling business, that usually you can count the true friends on one hand. And, I mean, you've been in the business for 20 years. So to have these relationships with so many people that you continue to keep in contact with is just amazing.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah. That's why I know this is a life thing. You know, even when I'm done physically performing, I've just been doing this so long. I've been doing it now for over half my life because I ain't 40 yet. So I feel like I have so much more to give. Like when I'm done, and I'm not anywhere near like being done physically competing, I'll know. Like nobody can make you try to be done before you know you're done. Right. And I don't want to just keep making comebacks and comebacks and comebacks. You know what I mean? I want to be done and be like done. But I wanted to have like a backstage role, like either as an agent or a producer or a trainer or something creatively. You know, I really think like a cool role for me to have would be to help people specifically with promos and like backstage segments, because promos kind of my forte. Mm-hmm. And just having the story of, you know, I used to be scared to death to talk in front of people. Like my throat would close up. I'd feel myself getting real red. My voice tone would change. My hands would shake. Like, and then wrestling just forced me out of it, you know? And now it's like the easiest thing. I feel like I can help people who maybe are too intimidated or like don't know how to bring that character out because they're thinking too much about what they have to say and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, I think that would be a really cool role too. So,
well, I mean, I think that you would be a perfect, like, person to do all of that stuff, because I know when we met, I was so nervous because we had a match at WSU.
WSU.
Yeah, and I remember we were the first match on the card, and
yeah.
You, of course, had, like, people out the door waiting for you to sign autographs and take pictures and all that kind of stuff. So, like, I remember I'm in the locker room, and I'm like, I'm so nervous because, like, I think I was maybe a year and a half in, and you were, like, the first, like, official name that I was working besides Madison Rain, because Madison Rain I had trained with at the school that we went to. So,
right.
Obviously, I knew her, but, like, with you, I was like, oh, my God, I'm so nervous. So, like, I'm sitting there. I think I put on lotion, like, 107 times that day. And you were like, are you ready to call this match? And I was like, yeah, okay. And I was so nervous. But you got me through that. And it was amazing. And I remember the Mick, not right after the match, but, like, a couple years later, he told me, and Mick's the guy that runs WSU, for those who don't know, he was like, do you know the reason why I put you over, or you went over in the match? He's like, but do you know the reason why I put you over later in WSU? And I was like, no, I really have no idea why. And he's like, because of the match you had with Angelina, you guys went out there, first match of the show, had a great just storytelling match and worked on just the basic stuff. And it was awesome. And you did great. And you just excelled from there. And I was like, oh,
that's awesome. That's awesome. So what I remember about that, we went like 13 or 15 minutes too.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't even ever try to go that long, but we did. And like, and I remember because at that, I feel like at that time on the indies, a lot of storytelling was starting to be forgotten. And I come from a storytelling era. It was starting to go into moves and spots just to do moves and spots. Right. Yeah. And I was not about that. So I remember when we were going, I don't know if you remember this, but I do, when we were going over the match in the back and, you know, we've got everything called. And I always tell, because I'm always like, people think, oh, because you're on TV, you're going to be cheered when you come to my promotion. So I have to have you be a babyface. And I'm always like, God, no, like people
yeah.
like me because of the heel I am on TV, but I can also, that's me dictating the match. So I talk a lot when I'm in the ring. I don't know if you remember that, but I
yeah.
talk a lot. I can be very showy. I can kill the time, you know, just sell for me. So I remember telling you, like when we were going over it, you came up to me and you were like, I feel like I'm forgetting stuff. Like, I feel like I don't have a lot to remember. And I was like, yeah, but that's okay. Because a lot of it is the stuff in between where, you know, it's character expression. It's you being a babyface. It's me being a heel. It doesn't have to be where you're just trying to memorize 900 things to do,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then after the match, I remember you were like so relieved. Cause I know up until the minute you did your entrance, you were like, I'm forgetting shit. Like there has yeah. to be more. And there wasn't more. And I'm like, no, you just take this and you just kind of draw it out.
Yeah.
And draw it out. And I remember you were just so happy after, and I was too, because I thought we had a great match too.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's great. Now we can just hang out for the rest of the show, and it was easy.
Yeah, but like you said, like how you could do the character telling and everything. Like I learned so much from you, even in those 15 minutes that we were out.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, you'd be the perfect person to be a coach of some sort, whether it's
I would love to.
And all of that. So
I would love to, just because I have so much time in me already and I'm not even done, that I can just give to like future generations. And I have so much TV experience too, which is completely different from just doing an indie at the, you know, the local VA down the street.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And let's talk more about TNA, because when you went back shortly after and you won your first title match, I've watched the match back and you got a concussion during the match.
Yeah.
And you, like when I watched it the first time, I didn't know, but after I went back and heard you talk about, and you've mentioned it in other podcasts, about having this concussion, you can notice, like, you don't know what's going on at all. So the match setup was the triple threat match in the cage. Kong, at this point, Velvet had pulled her by the hair through the cage.
We were tying her. Taylor was down, and we were all, so it was locked down April 2009. Mm-hmm. All the matches were in cage. And we had the six-sided ring at the time, too. And so we had Taylor, so the finish was going to come in, because they didn't want Kong to get pinned, because she had to be kept strong, right? So right. It was going to come down to me and Taylor, but anybody who pinned anybody would win. So we were, Taylor was down, and we started tying Kong's braids to the cage. Mm-hmm. And we really did, because if you see at the end of the match, like, she is really trying to pull, and, like, she is stuck on there. But what happened was, like, and all of us have just wrestled each other, like, so much, too. So we had, like, the best match planned. And my parents were there. So, like, Philly's only 8 hours from Toronto. And, like, we knew I was going to win that night. So, like, my parents, you know, had to be there for my first major championship win. So they drove 8 hours from Toronto. I put them up in a hotel and, you know, got them seats at the show and everything. They didn't know. I think a lot of people didn't know. But if you watch the finish of the match and how this, like, the 1-2-3, a lot of people, like, stand up because you just do when the bell rings. But then Some people were like, huh? Like, that. Like, I think they all expected more because it was a very flat finish. But that's because I was, like, on Pluto.
Yeah.
Like, I was not there. So that was not the way the match was supposed to go. Taylor and I had this awesome finishing sequence all figured out. And that just came to, like, so what happened was, if anybody wants to go back and watch it, you will see it once you know. When we tied Kong's hair to the cage, I was like, heel, to turn into Taylor doing a crossbody off the top. But I would take them like Billy Gunn did too, because I was just such a mark for him too, right? So I would kick my feet up to take that bump. Because either way, with a crossbody, I hit my head. I realized that if I keep my feet planted and catch you and try to roll with it, hit my head, or if I kick my feet up just to catch you and try to take a straight back bump, I hit my head. So it's just like, hit my head.
Yeah.
So, but she, I fed in close and she jumped real high and far. So it was like, I was already trying to catch her almost past my head anyway. And then I just kicked my feet up and all you see is just her whole body just come like splat right on my head. And as soon as that happens, I just go, like, I'm just like, and she goes to pin me and I don't even kick out. God love her. She kicked out for me. And then I just kind of went just like down and out. And we're live on pay-per-view. And this is how this is another thing about being a professional. Like, you have got to know how to ad lib live on pay-per-view when you got one person tied to a cage and one person unconscious and you're the third person. Like, you have to know what to do from there. So she just did what everybody thinks to do. She just grabbed a hold. And I'm the only one she could really grab a hold with. And, you know, she wasn't killing me. But it's crazy because when we watched it back the next day, I remember Bobby Roode was sitting on the end of the ring. And we would always watch it on the big, you know, entrance video Tron at the studios. And I remember I'm watching myself. I got my eyes open. And I'm, like, talking to Rudy, who was our ref. But, like, I have no recollection of that whatsoever. So to see yourself eyes open, talking, and, like, kind of doing some things, but you don't remember it, it's, like, so, it's, like, an alternate world. Like, it's so weird to see yourself eyes open and functioning, but you know you were out, just, like, out. Like, the human body is incredible. And so I guess what happened was Russo was in Gorilla, and he was telling Rudy, like, just have Taylor Wilde pin her. We'll put the belt on her TV. Like, just end the match. She's out. Like, end the match. But what had happened was, I think Taylor was trying to figure out what to do on her own. So she just went over to Kong and she went, kick me. And then Kong just went, bah! And like double boot stomped her. And then that's when I heard Rudy. So I came in and out. Once I was out, I came to at some point. And I remember like looking out into the crowd and it's already got the cage and then the ring rope. So everybody's already kind of a little bit distorted. Yeah. But I remember just like kind of opening my eyes and looking up at people and everybody was vibrating. Everybody looked like they were foggy and everybody was vibrating. And then I just blacked out again.
Wow.
And then the next time I came to was when Kong kicked Taylor, Chantel, whatever. And then Rudy, like he, if you see, he kind of nudges me too. And all I heard was Peter. And I was like, huh? And then I just saw her laying there and I was like, okay. And I just went over and, you know, went to the, and if you see me when I win, I'm just like, ha 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 ha. Like, I have no idea what just happened. I didn't know I won. I didn't know what was going on. And I couldn't stand either. Like, if you watch, knowing this now, like, Rudy grabs the belt and he hands it to me and I'm holding it. And I'm like, like, what's this? You know, like, I don't even, and I couldn't stand. So, like, he had to pull me up and I'm leaning against him and he's got my arm raised and I'm like this. And then I think they kind of cut pretty quick because they knew.
Yeah.
Because I remember they, you know, they dim the lights in the arena and then they kind of show like the video leading up to like the next match. Right. And Velvet had no idea. She was there ringside. You just can't get closer than where Velvet was unless they were in the ring. She had no idea that I was out. But Rudy was telling her because I couldn't like step down in between the middle and bottom rope. Like I couldn't figure legs through, get that. So Rudy told her, he's like, she is out. And she was like, oh no. So like, she kind of helped, they were both kind of helping push me out. And then, you know, there's the stairs cause there's the cage door you got to go out of.
Oh yeah.
So they both walked me up the ramp and into the back when the arena was dark. And then I pretty much just got like thrown into the arms of like four security guards. And then I had to be brought past everybody cause Gorilla was right there. So everybody's sitting there watching and I'm just like, hey. And then I go back to the train and he just had set up one chair. All I want to do is lay down. I just want to lay down. And he had just a single folding chair just set up right there. And he was like, sit on it. And I was like, but I want to sleep. And he was like, no, sit up. So he was like checking me and all this kind of stuff. And then they took me from there and they brought me back into like the trainer's room. I guess he had just made an immediate position ready for me backstage, but then they brought me into the trainer's room. And I do remember asking him, can I swear?
Yeah,
I swear. I was like, did I fuck up the finish of the match? Like, did I fuck it up? Did I fuck it up? I'm like, oh my God, I won. Did I fuck up the match? I don't know what happened. And I remember, and he answered me, but it kind of ties to something later. And I remember, like, I had a flip phone at the time because it was, like, only 2009. So, you know, you got to press, like, 1-3 times if you want to get the C, or you got to press, like, 2-3 times if you want to get that. So I was trying to text my parents to let them know I got hurt. But, like, brain to thumbs, I couldn't, like, spell. I didn't know how to hit. So I just gave my phone to Velvet. And I said, can you please text my mom? Like, here's her number. Can you please text her and tell her what happened? And so, of course, they freaked out. And they were staying overnight in Philly, too. So, like, they made sure that I was awake every half hour. But that's when we were doing, like, you know, Sunday night pay-per-views once a month. And then we were filming Monday, Tuesday every 2 weeks, which was, like, the best schedule ever.
Oh, I can imagine.
So we had to fly and do 2 days of TV after that. And I am, like, brain swollen, like major headache, like so bad. And I was like, can I even fly to Orlando tomorrow? Like, is that even safe?
Right.
Major concussion. But it was fine. But I remember like Vince wanted to just make it like this huge, big deal, like the beautiful people would, with me winning my first championship and we have the title. And they wanted like, I think we still did the backstage segment, but I think Madison and Tal did most of it because they wanted us screaming and blowing the horns and noisemakers. And I was just like, I can't I'm like, I can't even stand the sound of my own voice right now. Like my ears and my head and just everything hurts so much. I can't scream and yell. But we still did the whole segment. I think those girls did the most of like the loud noise making parts. But then that's when like, you know, I had to go down and we had the male stripper, you know, kind of do all the things. And then Kong came down. So that was all the next night after my concussion. But I remember a week later, I was home in Tampa and I was just like driving around and the trainer called me to check on me. We had the best trainers when we were in TNA. And so what had happened was, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, but this is just what I remember. There's like a pad in between like where your jaw hinges to your skull.
Okay.
There's like a pad in between that. And if you squish that pad, that like cuts off something to your brain. Okay. And you black out, you're out, unconscious. So what he thinks, because I was telling him like, God, it hurts to chew, like my jaw hurts so much. And he was like, what he thinks happened, and it makes sense to me because the last thing I remember seeing is Taylor's belly button and her hips. That's the last thing I remember seeing. And what he thinks happened was when she hit me and we landed, it jammed my jaw up. Like her hip bone hit me somewhere and kind of jammed my jaw up into my skull and like completely squished that pad. And that's what made me black out. And her also just completely squishing my head on that bump.
Wow.
And So he said that that was probably how I blacked out. And then he said, do you know that you asked me 27 times if you fucked up the finish of the match? And I was like, what? 27 times? I said, I remember maybe like three, because I know I asked you. And he's like, no. He goes, your brain, like, because of your injury, your brain wasn't comprehending that I was giving you an answer. Mm-hmm. So you just kept asking and asking and asking. He's like, I answered you. But your like brain wasn't computing answer.
Wow.
You know, so it was like, it was pretty crazy. It was pretty frightening. And, you know, that was only a couple of years after the Benoit tragedy, mm-hmm. you know, and he, you know, with the spots on the brain and concussions yeah. and stuff. So like that really scared me. And I was just in my prime like that. We were killing it in, you know, in TNA. It was my first major championship. I was probably 27 because I would have turned 28 that September. So like, you know, I'm like, I can't be 27 and be having this kind of concern, you right. know, about my future. But, you know, I'm 39. So clearly things have been okay. But yeah, at the time, you know, I was very concerned.
Have you had another concussion since then?
No, I mean, I've bumped my head, but I feel like that happens a lot. Like you just hit too hard or, you know, something, you're just out in your back for a second. So no, that was like the only one. But, you know, last year Ring of Honor had Chris Nowinski come in and he did like an hour and a half, like, you know, brain injury, concussion, how to stay safe kind of seminar with us. And gosh, it could have gone on for 3 hours, but like we had to, you know, it was like 30 minutes before they were opening doors and like everybody had to get back. Nobody had a chance to get in the ring before that show, okay. all that kind of stuff. You know, we'd do pre-tapes. Like it was pretty crazy that day, but we were all very thankful. And he said, even though I say I got a major concussion, he said, because I think somebody asked, are there levels of concussions? And mm-hmm. he was like, no, like a concussion's a concussion. You black out, that's a brain injury. It doesn't matter how long you're blacked out for or whatever. There's no like minor concussion and major concussion. It's a concussion. Right. So, you know, and you can't come back from that. You can't, you know what I mean? Like when you start to do damage to your brain, there's not a, it doesn't just revamp itself.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense,
heal,
you know,
away.
Because that was everybody's question. Like, how do you reverse brain damage? how do you take away all the stupid bumps you did when you were young? And it's like, you can't.
Oh, that's scary. But like you said, I mean, that was, like you said, a couple years after the Benoit situation. So, I mean, you have, especially going on since then and the way that other sports have adapted their concussion protocol since then. I mean, everybody's worried about this now, which is a great thing because too many people have had horrible instances and ended in tragedy, much like that one that we were talking
yeah.
about. So.
And well, what's really great advice, too, that he gave us that I would love to be able to pass on in this podcast, maybe
Definitely.
Somebody in business will hear it and think about it. His advice was, if you are in a match and if you even think somebody is knocked out, stop the match immediately. Pin the person, have somebody pin you, whatever kind of match you're in. Even if you aren't sure, it's better than trying to pick up and bump around somebody who is completely out, because then they can, because they're like unconscious on their feet, they could hurt you. They could break their leg because their brain doesn't know whether they could further the injury. Do you know what I mean? So it's like that's something that always really stuck with a lot of us. Like even if you think somebody's out, if they're not answering you, if you see they're just gone, end the match. However, you have to end the match, do it as quickly as you possibly can so that person can get to the back and get medical attention.
Wow, that is great advice. I mean, that's for any
so many people, because it's wrestler mentality. You just keep going.
Yeah.
You're broken ankle, you just keep going. You tore your ACL, you just keep going. But when somebody is like completely out of it, you can't. You have to find a way to stop it immediately.
Oh.
You got to cut that wrestler mentality and just keep going, and that's got to stop right there.
Well, you're right, because I mean, I've talked to many people on the podcast where they're like, oh, I was injured and I just went, I kept going, I did this and I just kept going.
We all have.
It's part of like being a wrestler, I guess, as horrible as that is, because you shouldn't compete if you're still injured. I mean, that just.
But if you see someone else hurt, especially knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stop the match. They're knocked out. You have to take that responsibility upon yourself. And if somebody wants to get mad, it's one of those apologize later things. But I don't think anybody would get mad at you for ending a match early or not doing things that were supposed to happen if you did it, you know, to protect your fellow, you know, your fellow performer or for their health and safety, you know.
100%. I mean, if that were to ever happen in a match that I was in, I would want that person to do whatever it took to get that over with so that we could go back and make sure whoever got injured, myself or the other person, was okay. I mean, that just human decency.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And even when I got my concussion, you know, we ended it pretty quickly after that because they knew. They were just like, end the match. Just have Taylor Pinner. We'll put the belt on her TV. Just end it. Oh, live on pay-per-view. You know what I mean? Like, you got to add, and that's live on pay-per-view. If you're in an indie show, I mean, you have all the time in the world to see that somebody is knocked out and you can end the match. And I don't think there's going to be, like, you know, serious repercussions. So that's just the most important thing.
Yeah, again, it comes down to human decency, too, I think, at that point, because you don't want them to further injure themselves or you or anybody else that is involved in the match.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, it's hard to transition from that subject into something else, you know, because it's so serious.
You can talk about it forever.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But let's talk more because, like, I realized when I was going through, I looked at all of your championship wins and championship losses, and it seems like if you look at just on paper, your greatest opponent would probably be Madison Rayne, just because of the amount of times that you guys had been in the ring together, had title switches. I mean, you had the title versus career match at one point in time, and it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. We were married for a long time on TV and on the road. But you know what? That's fun because when you know you can make magic with somebody and you know, like, oh my God, we could wrestle each other in our sleep. Like, that's how it was for me and, you know, Taylor Wilde. That's because we trained together too. You know, Madison and I, you know, she came into the Beautiful People and we helped her out. And then, you know, she broke off into her own. And when we were working each other, we just know each other. You just know each other's styles. You know each other as a person. You know each other's personalities, how you work. And that's what makes work fun, when you're in the ring with somebody where it's just easy. And it's like, this is such an easy job. Like, we get to put on little outfits and a lot of makeup and act like assholes and then go into the ring and then we get to make money and just do what we love to do for 5 minutes and then we get to make money and then we get to travel and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you kind of can't get better than that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, you've wrestled basically every name in the book, too, that was at TNA and not even in TNA, some others. But you know what surprised me when I was doing my research is the Beautiful People – as far as you and Velvet together, we're never tagged.
Know what you're going to say.
Yeah, like, how does that happen? Like, when I think knockout tag teams, I think of Velvet Sky and I think of Angel Love, and you guys were never the tag team champions.
I know, it's insane, and everybody says that, and Velvet and I still think that too. We're like, how did that never happen? But that's when TNA was in the mentality of, all the baby faces have to go over, and we were the heels.
Yeah.
So they were like, we can't have the heels be the first champions. It has to be the baby faces. And I think it was Taylor Wilde and Sarita. I think they were the first knockout tag team
champions.
I think we wrestled them, and then they won. So it was like, got to put the baby faces over. And then I think I had my visa issue very soon after that. So then I was gone. So, like, I had the knockouts tag team titles with Winter, and I think Tal had them with Madison. So it's like, go figure. Like, it still kind of happened for both of us, but separately. But that'll never make sense to us or anybody, I don't think.
Yeah, because it's just wild. Like, when I was like, wait, she's not a knockout tag team champion with
Velvet? I know. It's
Velvet?
So weird. We were the only actual tag team, so go figure.
Yeah, that is. I mean, they have, I know you're obviously with Ring of Honor, but I mean, they're having the Knockouts tag team tournament now. And, like, I see, like, some of the tag teams, they do have established tag teams, but some of them are just thrown together too. And I'm
thrown
like,
together. Yeah.
What are you thinking? This is not great tag team wrestling.
Sometimes that's just what you have to do when you don't have a ton of girls that you could just team up and have enough substantial matches out of either. So, and you know, Velvet and I we're still to this day getting a ton of tweets, especially now that Impact has the Knockouts tag titles back. Everybody is like, you guys got to go back and win them. Like, or they'll be tweeting Impact, like, you got to bring back Velvet and Angelina. And it's like, Velvet's retired and Angelina's in Ring of Honor. So I don't really know how you think that would happen. But
yeah, that's
it's kind of past its point now. So.
Well, I think maybe in the future, I know Velvet is retired, but it would be great for you guys to make like an appearance at some kind of tag team championship match there, just for the nostalgia part of it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Like, sure.
I mean, you are with Ring of Honor, and you're doing your own thing there. Of course, Velvet was there originally with you and Mandy Leon as the Allure, and now it's just you and Mandy. Of course, you have tapings coming up. I mean, mm-hmm. Are you ready to get back in the ring now?
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever not be ready because, like I said, I've been doing this more than half my life. So I don't not know this, if that makes sense. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, and it's like, it's almost like muscle memory. Like, you don't have to keep working out the same muscle every day for the muscle to remember, like, what it's supposed to do or to grow. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, yes, you always have to, like, you cannot be a wrestler if you don't have an athlete in you somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have athletic bones in your body. Like, I feel like almost anybody who's just been like Joe guy off the street who like tried, I can wrestle, it's fake, anybody can do it. And then, you know, they get in the ring and try to take a bump and then they're like, oh my God. Like, you know, you have to be an athlete. So no matter how long, like, you stay in wrestling throughout your life, like look at Bobby Roode. Like, I think, and I'm just picking him up because he's just the first one that came to my head because he still looks amazing. Yeah. But he's like, gotta be mid-40s, I think, right? So it's like you still have to put the work into your craft and into your body and just always be ready and stay in shape. And you should want to anyway. You should want to look good. You should want to not go do 2 minutes in a ring and be blown sky high.
Right.
But, I mean, I knew that this was really something that I could always do no matter what once I came back from having David, because I had my first match like 3 months after I gave birth.
Ooh, that's quick.
Oh, and I didn't want to come back that quick, but I feel like at the time I felt like I had to just for other circumstances. But I went like 20 minutes with Veda Scott, and I was blown sky high, but I wasn't like dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I had been out. So at least I stopped wrestling in July 2015, I feel like. So at least a year, if not maybe like 13 months or so, I had been out, grown a human, birthed a human, and come back to bumping.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I can have a few months off, you know, during this, you know, during 2020 madness, I'm always ready. I'm like always ready. I'm always ready. But, you know, I do have to get just a little more wind under me, which I can just do here. Yeah. So.
Well, I know for me, like, I haven't wrestled in a little over 2 years since I had my son, because obviously once, like, I felt like I was ready to maybe go back and start training and knock some of that ring rust off, all of these COVID.
The world shut down. Happening. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like yesterday I went for a little jog with my dog, and of course I live in Quebec, so it's not very warm. And like, I was like, oh my God. But I mean, that's 2 years not doing like hardly any conditioning at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, while I was pregnant, I was doing conditioning, but I was doing more like things to make my body strong for labor than I was conditioning myself for wrestling. So it's totally
different things. Nothing in life compares to wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, like I always use the analogy of like running on a treadmill is not the same as running the ropes in a wrestling ring for 3 minutes. Like 3 minutes, because we used to have to do that in Deep South at the end of training for like 3 hours. Bill DeMott would be like, all right, 3 minutes running the ropes. That is the most god-awful longest 3 minutes of your life.
100%.
And a lot of people we couldn't even do 3 minutes, and we were doing 3 hour daily wrestling and conditioning, and some of us still couldn't bang out 3 minutes. It's insane.
Yeah, because I mean, well, not only are you taking into account of going back and forth on the ropes as far as running, but you're also hitting the ropes, which I don't know if people understand how hard actual ropes are. So yeah, your body gets kind of callous to them when you're hitting the ropes over and over, but it's still kind of taking the wind away from you a little bit as you're doing that over and over and over again. It's crazy. And like,
and especially for females too, you don't have a lot of weight to throw into the ropes to get a lot of like pushback. Like, honestly, I was, to be perfectly honest, I didn't find my perfect stride for, like, running the ropes. I don't even know if I found it in Deep South. I feel like I might have found it in TNA, because I think I was doing, like, the four steps. I would do, like, the little stutter step and then the one, two, three, and that still never really worked for me. But I actually kind of took a little page off of how Mickey hit the ropes, because for me, because I just don't have a lot of weight on me to throw into them. Right. Plus the TNA ropes, we had six sides. So the ropes were shorter. So there wasn't as much give on those ropes as there would be on a ring where there's four-sided, because they're longer, right? So you have a little more give in the middle. But ours were also, so not only were they short in the six-sided ring, they were also pulled tight because everybody and their dog was springboarding. right? So AJ Styles and Amazing Red and Loki and Christopher Daniels and everybody is like Springboard, Plancha, you know, all the things. So we're hitting them and we're just like, oh, like I don't know if you ever know. So if you go back and watch our entrance and just don't look at our asses, when Velvet would sit on the rope to open it for me, we don't actually move the ropes. Like we couldn't. There was no, right, because they're just pulled so tight, we would sit on it and like our butt would literally just kind of hang over the top of it, because even our weight, you know, 120 pounds pushing it doesn't move it. And yeah, then we would be like, hey, and I kind of would always just kind of get my shoulder under it a little bit just to do something, but we never actually even like moved the ropes open for each other because we couldn't.
Oh, I'm definitely gonna have to go back and watch that, because like I've done,
we might move it this much on both sides, maybe this much, like
yeah. Because I remember I used to like, I didn't do it often, but I would sit on the middle rope and kind of like push the top rope open, especially if I was managing somebody, I would do that for them so that they could get through. And I remember like, even that's like not the easiest task, but you can do it. But now that you say that, I'm like, man, I bet that is true. I'm going to have to go back and check that out for sure.
Because it's like, it was a two-part banger. It's like, not only were the ropes shorter because we had two more sides to the ring, but they were pulled tight for, you know, 220-pound men to be, you know, springboarding off of all over the place. So really, yeah, for us being 100 pounds lighter, it was like, oh, I can't wait to run and hit this brick wall. Oh, I get to run across and hit this brick wall. But I feel like, and just being in a six-sided ring from being used to being in a four-sided ring, it is like a whole nother world. Like you have to adapt, but we all did get used to it. But I think because I could never just run to the ropes and kind of just lean into them and get anything off of it, what I would do, and this is actually when, like a couple years ago, it's probably 5 years ago, when Jay Lethal was first starting his training school, I remember he like hit me up because he had a couple girls in his class. And we take some bumps and do some things differently in the ring than guys do, because we have to protect here, whereas guys have to protect here. When they take certain bumps, you know, the guys have to kind of triangle their leg to make the pocket so things don't get hit. Just like us, we have to protect certain ways. Okay, so yeah, he kind of had me come in and help with his girls. And, you know, they were smaller than I was. So hitting the ropes, I was like, here's what I learned. And I feel like, I'm not even sure if this is true, but I feel like Mickey hits the ropes the same way. And I wonder if I saw her do that, but she kind of jumps into them. So some people run to the ropes and they kind of just do that pivot right as they hit the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, once I would start to do my pivot, I would jump and I would kind of throw my weight into the ropes, and then I would get like a major push off from that, where I didn't need that first little stutter step, because I could bounce by jumping and throwing my weight into the ropes. I could bounce so much further off. My first step was at least a third way across the ring.
Wow.
So then it was just like, come off the ropes to the first step. 2, 3, hit the ropes. First step, 2, 3, hit the ropes. My son's coming.
Aw.
Hi, sweetheart. Do you want to come say hi? He's like, he's the best just woken up kid.
Hi. Hey, does he want to come say hi?
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. He's like me. He needs like 10 minutes to wake up. You want to take a little song?
Yeah.
Take a little bath.
Did you sleep good? Yeah. Good.
He gets the best bedhead. And like for me, I'm not a person that's like, it's 7 a.m. Let's start the day. Like, I'm just like,
I feel you.
But obviously being moms, like we have to wake up and get going, but I've never been that kind of person naturally. So naturally he's kind of like that too, where he's always just like the craziest bedhead. And he's always just like, oh, he needs time to wake up. Yeah, he wants to retriever. My cat's behind me. He's in love with our cat trooper. So.
Well, I don't want to keep too much of your time since I know your son's now awake. So why don't we tell everybody where they can find you on social media and if you have any kind of things coming up that you want to promote?
Yeah, so my Facebook's private, so sorry. But you're on it.
Yeah.
And then my Twitter's at @actualalove. I figured that actual was kind of creative because everybody was a the or official. So I was like, actual A Love. That's really clever. And then on Instagram, I'm A Love, the number 4 life 222. And then, Ring of Honor, download the Honor Club app. That's an app you can get on your phone, which is awesome, by the way, because it can literally, like, we would stream our shows live on the app. So anybody who was part of the Honor Club, when we were doing house shows, they could watch them live from anywhere on the app. All the pay-per-views, all the TVs, all their history, everything is on there. So it's really cool. We are filming coming up in January, but we can't really say online when things will air until they air. Cause just with how everything is right now, we just got to film a bunch of stuff, just like everybody.
Yeah.
Film a bunch of stuff at one time. And then as they kind of program them into how the shows are going to go, then we advertise those. So I would say, you know, ROHWrestling.com, and then check out the Honor Club app too.
This is the Slickster, the Doctor of Style, and you're listening to VOC Nation.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Cassie Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Haku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into, like, snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Wrestling with History, the voice of choice, and Killer Ken Resnick.
When I die, they're going to open me up and find about 2,000 undigested Northwest Airlines cheese omelets.
Mr. Chris Cruz, what's going on?
Jesus, how did I get roped into this?
General Adnan went to school with Saddam Hussein.
He cried, I cried, he cried, and who could have cried?
Adnan lost a lot of family in the Iraqi war.
Everybody loves Granny.
Wow. Yeah, see, a lot of people don't know that.
Yes, Dylan, you guys are busting me up.
Catch Wrestling with History with Ken Resnick and I live on VOCNation.com Wednesday nights at 9:30 Eastern Time, or listen to the podcast by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app.
Stadium Journey, the worldwide leader in stadium reviews for the traveling sports fan, is proud to present the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation. Join us as we talk with prominent figures from around the sports world to discuss issues pertaining to sports travel and stadiums around the globe. New episodes air on VOC Nation Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Join Paul Baker, Dave Cartney, Mark Viquez, Dan Calchico, and guests from throughout the sports world on the Stadium Journey podcast on VOC Nation.
On Wrestling with Problems, we deal with two things, wrestling and problems. On the wrestling side, we cover the major feds as well as the indies. As far as problems go, we cover our problems, American problems, and world problems. Sometimes the problems are even related to wrestling. Every week, comedian King David Lane and wrestler, promoter Chris Best discuss the best and especially the worst in the world of wrestling with a heaping dose of comedy. Check us out live on VOCNation.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out. WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro. Talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out. VOCNation.com. WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Yo, this is Jerry Stiles of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobbs here. You get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby, because it's about to get nasty all around and up in this mother. Get ready. Nasty Sensation is coming at you.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.